If you want to learn how to cook, you study cooking. If you want to be a lawyer, you study law. If you want to be an engineer or an architect, you study engineering or architecture. And if you want to be financially successful, you study others who have become financially successful before you. You find out what they did, and then you do the same things over and over until you get the same results. Perhaps the most important principle of success was first articulated by Socrates in about 425 BC. It became known at that time as the Socratic Law of Causality. Today we call it the Law of Cause and Effect. It says that for every effect in your life, there are specific causes. It says that everything that happens, happens for a reason. Success is not an accident. What happens to you is not determined by luck or by coincidence. There's a reason for everything. When I began my upward journey from poverty and frustration to financial independence and self-confidence, I made a decision to study the most successful people in our society and to find out what they had done to get there. I learned some amazing things that have helped me over the years, and I'm going to share them with you. The first thing I learned is that there are almost 2 million millionaires in the United States, most of whom are self-made. These are men and women who have started with nothing, often broke or deeply in debt, and have gradually built themselves up to the point where they are financially independent today. These men and women have come from every walk of life with every level of education and skill, with every difficulty, obstacle, handicap, and challenge to overcome that you could ever dream of in your entire life. Some are young and some are old. Some are new immigrants who started off with no language skills, and some have been in America for generations. Some have excellent educations from the finest universities, and some are high school dropouts. Some have superb physical health, and others have been in wheelchairs, been hard of hearing, blind, or had other physical limitations. The most important thing is that no matter what problems are holding you back, someone else and probably thousands of other people have had problems far worse than you could ever dream of, and they've gone on to be successful nonetheless. And so can you. Dr. Thomas Stanley of the University of Georgia has spent more than 20 years studying self-made millionaires. He's interviewed thousands of them and compiled his findings into a variety of books, research studies, and reports. His conclusion is that every single kind of person from every walk of life has been able to start from nothing and pass the magic million-dollar marker by doing certain things in a certain way over and over again. When I began studying self-made millionaires, I was living in a rented apartment with rented furniture. I had a car that wasn't paid for, and I was deeply in debt. I was between jobs, and living off of credit cards. After several years of applying what I had learned about other successful people, hour after hour, day after day, and month after month, my financial fortunes began to turn. Within a few years, I had managed to solve my financial problems. And when I look back, I found that all I really did was to learn what other successful people had done before me, and then do the same things. There are a lot of myths about self-made millionaires in America. If you want to become a self-made millionaire, you need to dispel some of these myths in your own mind. Remember, as the humorist once said, it's not what a man knows what hurts him, it's what he knows that ain't true. If you have fixed ideas that are holding you back, they may be completely untrue, but they will cut off your chances of success nonetheless. Many people feel that you have to have a great education and you have to start off with a lot of money and be in an ideal situation to become financially successful. All of these are false. In fact, in a survey of the Forbes 400, the 400 richest men and women in the United States, they found that the high school dropouts among the group were worth, on average, $300 million more than university graduates if and when they made it to the Forbes 400 list. The most successful immigrant group in the United States in terms of starting and building successful businesses are the Russians. Why is this so? It's because the Russians have come over from a system where it was so extraordinarily difficult to survive and thrive that when they did arrive in America, believing that America is a land of opportunity, they find everything much, much easier than they ever experienced it before. As a result, they go on to start business after business and achieve successes that the average American continually claims are no longer possible. The president of General Electric Corporation, Jack Welch, probably one of the finest business executives in the world, has said that the most important single quality of leadership is what he calls the reality principle. The reality principle says that you must deal with the world as it is, not as you wish it would be. You must be completely honest with yourself. You must refuse to engage in self-delusion and hope that things will work out whether or not you do anything about them. With regard to building wealth in your life, you must be brutally honest and frank with yourself. You cannot play any games with your own head. You cannot wish and hope and pray that somehow you're going to win the lottery or strike it rich as the result of luck or some external circumstance. Everything that you ever become is completely up to you. The good news is that in America, there are more opportunities for wealth and affluence than have ever existed in all of human history. And as information, technology, and competition expands and explodes, more and more opportunities are being created every single day for the creative minority. Your job is to find them and exploit them. One of the things we know about self-made millionaires is that most of them start off with little or nothing. Most of them start off by saving their money carefully over a long period of time until they have enough to start a small enterprise or business. Some of the biggest companies in America were started on a kitchen table or in a garage, like the Hewlett-Packard Corporation or Apple Corporation. Some of the newest fortunes in America were started by people in multi-level marketing who paid $50 for a sample kit and then went out and went to work. In Dr. Thomas Stanley's studies of self-made millionaires, he found an interesting point. The number one quality that self-made millionaires used to explain their success was the quality of hard work. All self-made millionaires work hard, hard, hard. They start earlier, they work harder, and they stay later. Self-made millionaires work an average of 59 hours per week. The average working person in America today works at about 35 hours per week, more or less, even though they get paid for about 40. According to the studies, fully 50% of all working time is wasted. Even most managers privately report that fully half of the time they spend at work is spent doing things that have absolutely nothing whatever to do with the job. The most common places for time wastage at work are idle socializing with coworkers, personal telephone calls and personal business, combined with starting a little later, long coffee breaks and lunch hours, and leaving a little earlier. How do these sound to you? Only about 5% of people working today are working all out from the time they begin until the time they finish. These people, of course, are the ones on the fast track in their careers. The worst part of this research is that they discovered that the other 50% of the time that people are actually working on company tasks and responsibilities, they tend to work on low-value, low-priority tasks and therefore get very little done. Today, we're seeing layoffs of thousands of men and women from large corporations. An average of 400,000 to 500,000 men and women are laid off every year, mostly from white-collar mid-management jobs. Why is this? The answer is simple. The companies have finally learned that they are paying high salaries to people who are producing low value. No company can survive very long under those conditions, and these companies are determined to survive, so the redundant staff have to go. If you're serious about becoming financially independent, or even better, becoming a self-made millionaire over the course of your career, I can tell you two things. First, it is eminently possible. Hundreds of thousands of men and women achieve it on a regular basis. And whatever anyone else has done, you can probably do as well. The fact that someone else has done it is ample evidence that it's possible for you. The only question is really, how badly do you want it? Second, the reality principle says that if you want to achieve a certain level of success, you have to find out what other people have done and then do the same things over and over until you get the same results. As long as you don't try to fool yourself and look for shortcuts, you are virtually guaranteed of eventually reaching and even exceeding your goals. You can start off with what I call the 40-plus formula. This says that you work 40 hours per week in America for survival. If you only work 40 hours per week, if you only work the number of hours that are required of you, then all you will ever do is survive. You will tread water. You will make enough to pay your bills and perhaps a little more besides, but you will never get ahead and you'll never be successful. If you happen to lose your job for any reason at all, you will be in serious difficulties. According to the surveys, the average person in America is 2 paychecks away from homelessness. Fully 70% of Americans have no discretionary income. That is, they spend every penny they earn and a little bit more besides every paycheck. Most American families have little or no savings. The average American accumulates a net worth of about $31,000 over the course of a 45-year working lifetime. Your job is to beat the odds. Your job is to find out what unsuccessful people do and don't do it. At the same time, your job is to find out what very successful people do and do those things over and over again until you become very successful as well. According to my 40-plus formula, every hour that you put in over 40 hours on your job or on yourself is an investment in your future success. You can tell exactly where you're going to be 5 years from now by simply looking at how many hours per week you put in on your job and on improving your ability to get results for your employer and your customers. If you work 50 hours per week, you're putting yourself on the side of the angels. The average self-made millionaire in America, as I said, works 59 hours per week in America, and in many cases, for many years, he or she works 70 and even 80 hours per week. Let me put it this way. I've studied successful men and women in America for more than 25 years. I have never found a single successful person who works only 40 hours, only 5 days per week. The idea of the five-day week, which was promoted vigorously by the labor unions as a great advance in employment, has been the cause of more underachievement and failure than perhaps any other single myth. The fact is that all really successful people work 6 days per week. They work 10 hours per day, 6 days per week, and they do it for many months and many years. The average self-made millionaire has taken 22 years to get from the point of being broke to the point of being worth more than $1 million. It is not easy, and it's not quick. The good news is, though, that it is eminently possible if you want it badly enough. The second part of success at work, doing what other self-made millionaires have done, is perhaps the most important. It is to work all the time you work. Now, this is a remarkable idea for most people. Most people look upon work as an extension of school. At school, you go there to socialize and spend time with your friends between classes. Many people think when they take their first job that this is a place that you go to spend time with your friends. This is why fully half of the working day is spent socializing and in idle conversation on the telephone with friends and family. Work is seen as a giant sandbox by many people where they go to occasionally play and do a few things, get a paycheck, and then go home. But this is not for you. You must work all the time you work. When you go to work, you put your head down, and for the entire time that you are there, you work wholeheartedly. Many people believe the myth that you have to spend a lot of time getting along with your coworkers. Now, of course, it's important that you be a positive and pleasant person to work with, but you can do this in a few minutes each day. You don't have to spend endless hours of socializing over recent sports activities, television shows, and family experiences. Your job is to work all the time you work. When you go into work in the morning, you don't pick up your dry cleaning or drop off your laundry. You don't socialize with your friends or phone your family. You don't take long coffee breaks and lunch hours. You work all the time you work. You put your head down and you commit yourself to getting the very most done that you possibly can in the time that you have available to you. If someone else comes in to talk to you, you explain to them that you would be pleased to talk to them after work. But right now, you have to get back to work. Keep repeating to yourself, back to work, back to work, back to work. Get the reputation around your company as being the hardest working person in the organization. What we have found is that people who achieve great financial success, either in their own businesses or working for other organizations, are people who very early develop a reputation for hard, hard work. And everyone knows who works the hardest in every organization, including your own. There's no quality that will bring you to the attention of people who can help you better than your developing a reputation for being one of the hardest workers around. A young man told me a story of how he started off with a large organization and eventually passed all the people who were ahead of him in the company. He noticed that his boss came in a little earlier than the rest of the staff and stayed to finish up his work and left a little bit later. so he resolved to come in 15 minutes before his boss came in and to leave 15 minutes afterwards. He put his resolution into action immediately. This is another hallmark of the high achiever. They don't procrastinate when they have a good idea. He began coming in 15 minutes before his boss and spending the whole day working all the time he worked. When his boss left, he would still be there working. The boss said nothing for several weeks. Finally, his boss came over to him and asked him why he always seemed to be there. Every time the boss came or left, this young man was at his desk working away. Why? The young man said it was because he was really determined to be successful in this company, and he knew he couldn't be successful unless he was willing to work harder than anyone else. The boss smiled and nodded and went on his way. Within a year, the young man had been given additional responsibilities, each one of which he took on and fulfilled completely. He was soon promoted to a higher position. He studied, upgraded his skills, and continued to work hard. Within a couple of years, he had surpassed all of his rivals. He had earned the respect and esteem of the other managers, and they had soon promoted him so that he was one of them rather than one of the staff. It's a simple strategy, but one that works over and over again, year after year. If your goal is to achieve wealth in your lifetime, you have to know how it is done. It is contained in two words. These words are add value. All wealth comes from adding value in some way. All wealth comes from serving and satisfying customers better than they could be served and satisfied by someone else by adding value to them that no one else is currently adding. For your entire career, your job is to constantly seek out ways that you can add value to your boss, to your coworkers, to your customers, to your suppliers, and to everyone else and anyone on whom you rely for your success. This should become your mantra. Add value. Add value. Add value. In your job, you should be looking for ways every day, every week, to add value, to become more valuable than you were before. One of the major revolutions in thought that has taken place in the world of work in the last few years is the idea that you must justify your position anew each day. It used to be that people could coast. They would work hard for a few years until they'd reached a certain position of responsibility, and then they would coast for many years, if not for the rest of their careers. They would say, well, I did a great job a few months or a few years ago, so now I'm entitled to keep on at my same level. But this is no longer good enough. Today, everybody wants to know, what have you done for me lately? Today, your boss wants to know what you have done to add value this day, this week. There are two major sources of value in the world of work today. The first is time, and the second is knowledge. Today, time is the currency of modern business. Everyone is fixated on reducing the amount of time that it takes to get the same results. Customers will pay dearly for anyone who can save them time in getting them the products and services that they want and need to improve their work and their lives. As I mentioned earlier, most of the major improvements in modern management are aimed at reducing the amount of time that it takes to get critical results. Knowledge is something that we've talked about before, but let me give you the critical idea about time. The most important factor of time today is speed. The most important quality that you can develop with regard to time is a sense of urgency. This is a determination and a resolution to move fast when opportunity presents itself to you. Develop a bias for action. Remember, fast tempo is essential to your success. All successful people not only work hard, but they work fast. Procrastination is not only the thief of time, it's the thief of life. You must develop the habit of moving quickly when something needs to be done. You must develop a reputation for speed and dependability. Study after study shows that people with the best reputations for speed and dependability are very quickly moved onto the fast track in their careers. The wonderful thing is that the faster you move, the better you get. The faster you move, the more experience you get. The faster you move, the more you learn and the more competent you become. The faster you move, the more energy and more enthusiasm you have. People who move fast on a regular basis have a totally different temperament and personality than people who move slowly or who take a casual attitude toward their work. So do your work in real time. One of the ways to dramatically accelerate the speed at which you get the job done is to do it immediately, Do it now. Do it the moment it comes up. It's amazing how much time can be lost by picking up a task and looking at it or starting it and then putting it down and coming back to it again and again. Sometimes small tasks should be done as fast as they arise. This will get you a reputation for being the kind of person to give jobs to when you want them done quickly. Successful people are those who have developed the habits of success. Fully 95% of everything you do throughout your day is based on habit. Successful people form good habits and allow those habits to govern their behaviors. Unsuccessful people allow bad habits to form, and these bad habits can then lead to frustration and failure. My friend Ed Foreman says, "Good habits are hard to form, but easy to live with. Bad habits, on the other hand, are easy to form, but hard to live with." What kind of habits do you have? Habits are conditioned responses to stimuli. What this means is that you develop a habit by repetition. You do the same thing over and over again until it becomes automatic. Successful people have developed automatic success habits. They have trained themselves, like an athlete, to do certain things in a certain way over and over again so that they do them automatically without their even thinking about them. One of the habits of success is that of early rising. Successful people get up a little bit earlier, read and get ready, plan and organize their day on paper in advance, and get going before the average person even gets started. I met a woman recently who found that by getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, she could do the equivalent of a full day's work by 7 or 8 o'clock, before the average person even got into gear. In no time at all, she was earning double the amount of her coworkers. She was continually promoted, advanced, and paid more money because she was getting far more done than anyone else. She was adding far more value. Successful people make a habit of getting up earlier, usually by 6 or 6:30 in the morning, and then getting going immediately. The average person, on the other hand, takes a full hour to get up, get going, and then they drag themselves off to work. But this is definitely not for you. When your alarm clock goes off, get up immediately and get going right away. Start moving. Also, make a habit of punctuality. Less than 2% of the population are punctual, and everybody notices it. Be on time, or better yet, early for every appointment. Get into work before anyone else gets there. And when you do arrive, begin working immediately. Don't waste time in reading the newspaper, drinking coffee, or idly socializing. Develop a reputation for being the kind of person who is always working and always working on high-priority tasks. Work all the time you work. Discipline yourself to keep yourself focused continually. Don't allow other people to put you off your game. When you have coffee breaks or lunches, have them when they best suit you, not when they best suit the clock. Make a habit of working a little bit later than the average person. In fact, here's a powerful formula that you can use to double your productivity and maybe even double your income over the next 12 months. It's very simple, and it works for anyone who uses it. First, make a decision to come into work 1 hour earlier. This doesn't take very much effort, and it allows you to beat the traffic. When you get into work, have your work all planned and then put your head down and go full blast. The statistics show that you can do 3 hours of work in 1 hour of uninterrupted time in the office. If you're in sales, schedule your first appointment as early as possible. Many of the most important people you could want to see get into the office at 7 and 7:30 in the morning, so arrange to meet them there. One salesman friend of mine who is at the top of his field found that the key to getting appointments with the key decision makers was to call their offices at 7 o'clock in the morning or 6:30 or 7 in the evening. What he found was that at these times all the staff had either gone home or weren't in yet. The only people still working were the key people. They would answer the phone personally, and he would get an opportunity to talk to them and arrange to see them later. Develop the habit of moving fast. As I said before, fast trackers in every field have a sense of urgency. Only a small percentage of the population moves quickly when opportunity or responsibility presents itself. You must be a member of this small percentage. When I was younger, I used to think that when my opportunity came along, I would really take advantage of it at that time. I soon learned that your opportunity never does just come along. The key to this is contained in the story called Acres of Diamonds by Russell Conwell. In short, It says that your greatest opportunities lie under your own feet. They are right where you are. They lie within your current talents, skills, ability, and experience. They lie within your own business or industry. They lie within your own background or career. Your acres of diamonds are under your own feet, and that is where you should start to look. Theodore Roosevelt once said, "Do what you can with what you have, right where you are." This is the key to success. Do what you can with what you have, right where you are. Focus on the present moment and on your current situation. Don't wait for things to be just right. It is you who will make things just right. By throwing your whole heart into what you're doing right now, every minute, you will open up doors of opportunity that are not now even visible to you. Look around you at this very moment and ask yourself, what could I do to add value to the most important people in my work life? What could you do to make things faster, easier, or better for the people who are depending on you? Be proactive rather than reactive. Be the kind of person who reaches out and grabs opportunities. And if you don't have any opportunities, create them personally through your own efforts. A secretary in Boca Raton, Florida, told me an interesting story at one of my seminars. She had listened to one of my audio programs and set a goal to increase her income by 50% in the next year. However, she told me that she felt it was probably impossible in her company because she was part of a large secretarial pool and salaries were pretty much fixed. Everyone made very much the same. Nonetheless, she decided to look for ways to add value to her boss. She noticed that he spent a lot of time replying to correspondence. She began replying to the correspondence for him, and then taking the finished letters to him to edit and sign. Soon, she had taken over the responsibility of handling 90% of his regular correspondence. In addition, she began to take additional courses to upgrade her skills in word processing, page making, and report preparation. Bit by bit, she began to take smaller tasks away from him and do them eventually in an excellent fashion. After about 3 months, her boss called her in and closed the door. He said to her that he really appreciated the things that she was doing for him and he wanted to increase her pay. He asked her not to tell anyone else so that it didn't make any waves around the office. But he raised her salary from $1,500 to $1,750 per month. She continued looking for ways to add value to his work. 3 months later, he increased her pay again, and 3 months later again, until by the end of the year, she was making $2,250 per month, while the other secretaries around her were still earning an average of $1,500. She said it was absolutely amazing what happened when she set a goal and then began to focus all of her energies on adding value to her boss and her company. And this same strategy can work for you. Every job is an opportunity for you to solve problems and to satisfy the needs of other people. Since the problems and needs that people have are unlimited, the opportunities for you to create value are unlimited as well. Every fortune begins with an idea to serve people better in some way. Every entrepreneur who starts and builds a successful company has usually worked successfully for another organization where he or she continually looked for ways to increase his or her value to the company. The primary sources of value, the keys to wealth building, are time and knowledge. Your job is to continually increase your knowledge so that the value of what you do becomes greater and greater. You've heard it said that knowledge is power, but this is only partially true. It is only knowledge that can be applied to some good purpose that is power. Your job is to gather the knowledge that you need so that you can do your job fast and well. There's a saying in Texas that goes, "It's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog." It's your ability to contribute value to your current situation, either as an employee or as an employer, as a company worker or company owner, that determines your income and your financial future. The bottom line is that successful people are more productive than unsuccessful people. Successful people have better habits. They dream bigger dreams. They work from written goals. They do what they love to do, and they concentrate on getting better and better at it. They use their natural abilities to the full. They are continually generating ideas to solve problems and to move ahead. They focus on applying themselves for maximum results. Above all, they are constantly looking around themselves for opportunities to add value to everything they do. they have a sense of urgency and a bias for action. They work all the time they work. They develop a tremendous sense of forward momentum, and as a result, they soon begin to feel unstoppable. And so will you. Successful people are not necessarily those who make the right decisions, but they make their decisions right. They think it through, make a decision, take action, get feedback, self-correct, and continue on. In a recent study, several managers were divided into two groups: those who were on the fast track in their careers and moving ahead rapidly, and those who had flattened out and seemed to be going nowhere. They gave both groups of managers the same set of written decision-making tests. On the test, both groups of managers scored equally well. In other words, in terms of their ability to analyze a situation and make the correct decision on paper, they were both equally competent. So what accounted for the success of the one group of managers versus the others? It was simply this. The successful group actually made the decisions and took action after thinking, while the second group of managers was fearful and indecisive and afraid to make a decision in the real world for fear that it would turn out poorly. We said earlier in this program that the greatest obstacle to success, the common denominator of learned helplessness and the comfort zone, is fear of all kinds, especially the fear of failure. The fear of failure does more to hold you back than any other single factor in life. It is the fear of failure that makes people indecisive and vacillating. It's the fear of failure that causes people to hesitate and procrastinate. It's the fear of failure, the fear that they might make a mistake, that causes people to sabotage themselves and their careers year after year. But all successful people are decisive. All successful people have developed the habit of considering the information carefully and then taking action, even though there's no certainty about the outcome. You're going to learn some key ideas and a specific methodology that you can use to make better choices and decisions in everything you do. These ideas and methods have been developed and applied by the most successful men and women in our society. They are mental tools that, once you have them, you can use them for the rest of your life. Here is a 7-step method that will help you solve more problems and make better decisions. It is simple and powerful. It contains the basic elements of problem-solving and decision-making that you can apply to any area of your life. Step 1. Approach the problem or difficulty, whatever it is, confidently, optimistically. Instead of calling it a problem, change your language and call it a situation. A problem is a negative word, while a situation is a neutral word. In one well-known example, at the beginning of each year, the chairman of the company would enter the meeting room with a brand new dictionary and a pair of scissors. With great fanfare, he would open the dictionary to the word problem and cut it out with the scissors and burn the paper in an ashtray. He would then say, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have many situations in this company, but we have no problems. We don't use the word problem around here." A better word is the word challenge. A situation is neutral, but a challenge is something that you rise to, something that brings out the very best in you. Even better is the word opportunity. An opportunity is something that enables you to take advantage of the details or factors in a situation. Everyone is looking for opportunities, and within every problem is contained the seeds of an equal or greater opportunity or benefit. Your job is just to find it. Step 2 in this methodology is for you to define your situation clearly. What exactly is the situation? What is it that you are worrying about or thinking about? One of the primary reasons for worry and concern over difficulties is contained in the failure to define them clearly in the first place. It's very important that you look for ways to expand or to improve your definition of the problem situation. For example, once you define it clearly in writing, you can ask yourself, what else is the problem? For example, when I consult with marketing organizations, they might say that their problem is that their sales are not high enough. If your sales aren't high enough, that would dictate a particular line of thinking and a particular set of possible solutions. But what if you redefined the problem and said instead that our customers are not buying enough from us? This is a different statement of the same problem, but it leads you in a different direction for solutions. If your customers are not buying enough, what could you do to induce them to buy even more? What could you do to present your product or service in a more appealing way so that more customers would be more likely to consume it? Another definition of the same problem situation is, our customers are buying too much of our product or service from our competitors. This leads you in an entirely different direction. What is it that your prospective customers see in the offerings of your competitors? How could you offset the perceived advantages or benefits that your customers feel that they will enjoy from dealing with your competitors? Perhaps the best way of redefining this problem situation is to say that our salespeople are not selling enough of our products or services to our prospective customers. This would lead you in the direction of improved sales and management training, different methods of supervision and field management, and so on. In every case, stating and restating the problem in a variety of different ways can lead you to totally different approaches to solving it and make it much more likely that you will come up with an excellent solution and a good decision at the end of the process. Step 3 in this process is to ask, what are all the possible causes of this particular problem situation? The natural tendency of individuals is to decide that there are only one or two solutions and then to choose among them. But the quantity of possible solutions that you can develop, as in brainstorming, determines the quality of the solution or decision that you finally settle upon. At this stage of the process, your job is to develop as many different, even ridiculous, solutions as possible. One of the approaches that has always helped me in dealing with any difficult situation, as I mentioned before, is to imagine for a moment that everything that I am doing right now is dead wrong. This exercise opens my mind to far more possibilities than if I assumed that the solution lies in doing what I'm currently doing in a slightly different way. What if you were completely wrong in the most difficult situation that you are currently facing? What if the correct answer was exactly the opposite of what you're committed to doing right now? How would this change your approach? Step 4 is for you to define all the possible solutions based on your definition of the problem and your generation of possible reasons for the problem in the first place. Write down as many different solutions as you can find. Use brainstorming and/or mindstorming if suitable. The more different solutions and combinations of solutions that you can come up with, the better decision you will eventually make at the end. Step 5, once you've developed a variety of solutions, is make a decision. Often, any decision is better than no decision. Fully 80% of problem situations that you face should be dealt with and solved immediately. Indecisiveness and procrastination on minor decisions is a major source of stress and a terrible time waster. When you decide upon a solution and make a decision, before you take action, ask yourself these two questions. First, what is the worst possible thing that can happen if you implement this solution? Think of the ultimate downside. Fill out what is called the disaster report on this particular solution. J. Paul Getty, the world's richest man at one time, was once asked for his secrets of success. He said that one of his secrets before entering into any business deal was to determine the worst possible thing that could happen if the business deal went wrong. He said the second part was to make sure that that didn't happen. The second question you ask before you implement your decision is, what else is the solution? Your ability to develop a plan B, an alternate solution to keep in your back pocket in case the first solution doesn't work, gives you tremendous flexibility. The most successful leaders throughout human history have been flexible thinkers in that they have always had alternatives completely developed and ready to go in case their first decision didn't work out for some reason unknown to them. Step 6 is for you to assign specific responsibility for carrying out the decision. Who exactly is going to take the actions necessary? What exactly is to be done? If several people are involved, what are the exact, specific responsibilities of each person? It's absolutely amazing how many decisions fall apart at the end because no one was assigned the specific responsibility for carrying them out. Step 7 in this process is for you to set a deadline. If it's a major decision, set sub-deadlines and set schedules for checking on progress. A decision without a deadline is a conversation without an end. It is merely a verbal exercise. A deadline locks in the decision and makes it something hard and tangible that people can relate to and act upon. Once you've made a decision, never consider the possibility of failure. As I said earlier, it is the fear of failure that holds people back rather than failure itself. It's the power of decision, your willingness to make clear, unequivocal decisions, and then to take action in the direction of your dreams and goals that will eventually make everything possible for you. One of my favorite quotes is from Wolfgang von Goethe. He said this in the preamble to the second part of Faust. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is an elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans. That the moment that one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance that no man could have dreamed would have come his way. Are you in earnest? Seek this very minute. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Only engage and the mind grows heated. Begin, and then the task will be completed. There is something about the power of decision that activates all your mental powers. It increases your courage and confidence and raises your self-esteem. It boosts your energy and enthusiasm and raises your level of self-expectancy. Making clear, unequivocal decisions about who you are, what you want to accomplish, and what you're going to do frees you of the indecisiveness that traps most people. Don't be afraid of failing occasionally. All great successes were once great failures. Thomas Edison was perhaps the greatest failure in the history of invention, but he was also the most successful inventor of the modern age. By 1930, fully one-sixth of the American working population was employed producing products invented by Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison's attitude toward his experiments was very instructive. He kept excellent notes on every experiment. He absolutely believed that he would find the solution he was looking for if he kept on long enough. Each time an experiment failed, he looked upon it as having successfully identified just one more way that did not work. That put him, in his own mind, one more experiment closer to whatever it was he was looking for. He made over 11,000 experiments before he discovered the carbon-impregnated filament that led to the first electric light bulb. But he never wavered. For him, success was a process of eliminating all the ways that didn't work until there was only one way left. The rest is history. Today we live in the information age, and the foundation of the information age is the computer and the software programs that run in those computers. A software program is made up of many hundreds of thousands and even millions of lines of code. Software programmers often spend many months designing the binary codes that allow a program to run smoothly once it's installed. But let me ask you a question. Do you think that even the most sophisticated software program developed by the most sophisticated software engineers works right the first time? Of course not. When a program is ready for its first run, the software designers know that it's full of bugs. They know that it is a natural part of the process of software development to begin running the program and removing the bugs one by one. Many software developers are now putting their new, untried software onto the Internet and offering it at no charge to anyone who wants to pick it up. The computer owners who pick up the software and download it into their computers then go to work with the program. In no time at all, they begin to find the bugs that have not yet been removed and report them back to the troubleshooting division of the software developer. The software developer then incorporates those comments into the ongoing redesign of the program until it works perfectly. But the software developer knows that if you just remove the bugs one after another, as they are discovered, eventually the program will be flawless and can then be multiplied many thousands or even millions of times and sold all over the world. Your life is very much the same. When you start off as a young person, there are a lot of bugs in your program. Your job is to continue learning, getting experience, evaluating the experience, and removing the bugs until you get smarter and smarter and smarter. You are, in fact, a learning organism. You are learning at a fantastic rate. In the first 2 years of your life, you learn to coordinate 26 different senses. You learn to walk, talk, interact, and develop a social personality. You learn how to control your body, your emotions, your face, and your hearing. You learn how to coordinate sounds, smells, tastes, touches, and images. You learn at such a phenomenal rate that it's unlikely that you'll ever learn again at the same speed. But, even as an adult, you still learn at an incredible rate. With everything that you do, you act like a cybernetic mechanism, constantly taking feedback from your environment, incorporating it into your existing knowledge base, and adjusting your course accordingly. And of course, the more information you take in, the more different things you try, the faster you learn, the smarter you get, and the more rapidly you move ahead. A high degree of failure ensures a high degree of success. Arthur Gordon, the author, once approached Thomas J. Watson Sr., the founder of IBM, and asked him how he could be more successful as a writer faster. Thomas J. Watson, one of the giants of American business, replied with these profound words. He said, "If you want to be successful faster, you must double your rate of failure. Success lies on the far side of failure." What this means is that the more you have failed already in life, the more likely it is that you are on the verge of great successes. In fact, in a multi-year study of luck and good fortune, one researcher found that a streak of good luck seems to follow a streak of bad luck. It is all a matter of probabilities. The more you try, the more you triumph. One of the most important elements of decisiveness is your ability to make choices among priorities. It is your ability to look at all the different things you could do and the directions that you can go in life and decide among them correctly. In fact, your ability to make the right choices and decisions will determine everything that happens to you in life. A successful life is the result of a series of successful choices and decisions. An unsuccessful life is the result of a series of poor choices and decisions. Spencer Johnson says in his book, Yes or No, that the starting point of making better decisions is for you to stop making worse decisions. The starting point of moving ahead rapidly in your life is often for you to stop doing the things that are holding you back. In terms of priorities, there are some very important rules. The first is that the very worst use of your time is to do very well what need not be done at all. Many people spend an enormous amount of time in what is called needless perfectionism. They work for hours getting a particular job or task exactly right when the job or task is not even important in the first place. Often they do this because unconsciously it enables them to avoid coming to grips with the really important tasks and responsibilities where big differences can be made and big failures are possible. The fear of failure is an insidious thing. It sits deep down in your subconscious mind and it sabotages you without your even knowing it. One of the manifestations of the fear of failure is the tendency for the average person to procrastinate when faced with large tasks or multiple responsibilities. The average person continually puts off doing the very things that, if they did them and did them well, would make the greatest difference in their lives. Don't let this happen to you. Another rule with regard to priorities is that since you can only do one thing at a time, choosing to do one thing means simultaneously choosing not to do everything else for that moment. Sometimes it is useful for you to think about what you will not be doing if you do a particular thing before you start. Turning on the television at night means not spending time talking to your spouse or to your children. Reading the newspaper or socializing in the office means not getting on with the important tasks that are essential to your success in your career. The third point about setting priorities is that every action or inaction is a choice between what is more valuable and what is less valuable. Your ability to choose among competing alternatives determines everything that happens to you. It's essential that you learn to choose well. One of the most useful tools for making better choices and decisions, for setting better priorities, is a list. You should always make a list before you start work, preferably the night before. Always work from a list. Think on paper. All successful, highly productive people write everything down before they begin. Then, go over your written list and set values and priorities on each item. As a general rule, the planning and preparation you put into a task before you begin has the greatest impact on the final result. you've heard it said, well begun is half done. The key mental tool you use for evaluating your work before you begin is the consideration of future consequences, either positive or negative. The mark of the superior intelligence in the highly productive person is their accuracy in predicting what might happen as the result of a certain course of action. There are consequences, secondary consequences, and unexpected consequences with every action. Your ability to think through each of these will have as much impact on your success as any other factor. Now, the immediate obvious consequences are what should materialize as the result of cause and effect. Every action you take is aimed at an improvement of some kind, a consequence that would not occur if you didn't do something. So immediately expected consequences are always positive and aimed at a betterment of your conditions. Secondary consequences, however, can be even more important. These are the things that are likely to happen afterwards as a result of what you do to achieve the primary consequences. These secondary consequences and your ability to identify them accurately can have an enormous positive or negative impact on the final result. Here's a simple example. A person has a few drinks with friends, stays longer than he expected, and now sets out to drive himself home under the influence of alcohol and in a hurry. The initial drinks and socializing, plus the extra time, were aimed at achieving the positive consequences of a pleasant social evening. What, however, are the secondary consequences? The secondary consequences are that the driver is now in a hurry to get home at night drunk. If he has an accident and hurts either himself or someone else, the secondary consequences of drinking too much and staying too late can be disastrous. Here's another example. A young person wastes his time in high school, barely graduates, gets a low-paid job, and spends his evenings socializing or watching television. What are the likely secondary consequences of this lifestyle and these choices? Well, the likely secondary consequences are probably a lifetime of poorly paid work, limited promotion and opportunities, a substandard lifestyle, constant worry about money, limited freedom, an unexciting social circle, and an eventual conviction and belief of hopelessness and despair. It was fun to get out of school, get an easy job, and have a good time, but the secondary consequences are unhappiness and failure. Unexpected consequences are things that happen that cause you to end up far worse off than if you had never initiated the first action at all. Parents, for example, who give their children everything they ask for in an attempt to make them happy in the short term, often end up creating the unexpected consequences of raising uncontrollable, spoiled, selfish, demanding children who resent their parents and doubt themselves. When thinking through potential consequences, it's often short-term gain that leads to long-term pain. The opposite is true as well. Short-term pain often leads to long-term gain. Always be thinking of the difficult, disciplined, determined things you can do today that will lead to greater riches, rewards, and satisfactions in the future. Think long-term, not short-term. Play down the board in your life. Think about the future. The decisions that you make with regard to long-term consequences will determine the quality of your entire life. Developing the power of decision also requires that you set posteriorities as well as priorities. A priority is something that you do more of and sooner. A posteriority, on the other hand, is something that you do less of and later, if at all. The only way that you can get more time to do more of the things that really make a difference in your life is by definitely deciding what activities you are going to cut back on or discontinue altogether. As you evolve and grow through life, one of the most important decisions you make has to do with the things you are going to stop doing. These are the activities and social functions that you are no longer going to engage in or attend. These are the time-wasting or time-consuming activities that you need to remove from your life if you're going to have enough time to do the things that are really important to you. Another tool that you can use to be more decisive is the 80-20 rule. This simply says that 80% of your results come from 20% of what you do. 80% of your sales come from 20% of your customers. 80% of your profits come from 20% of your products, and so on. Before you begin any set of tasks, stand back and determine which are the 20% of those tasks that will account for 80% of your results. Then, discipline yourself to go to work on those key tasks and stay with them until they're done. This brings us to perhaps the most important single principle in decisiveness, the principle of concentration. Learning to concentrate is one of the most important tasks of adult life. It's never easy, but with it, you can do almost anything, and without it, you can do almost nothing. Here's a simple formula for you. You've gone through all the previous exercises of making decisions and setting priorities. Your job now is to select the single most important thing that you could possibly be doing. You ask yourself this question. If I were to be called out of town for a month, and I could only complete one task before I left, what one task would that be? This question will help you to clear your mind completely. You will see that one of the biggest and most difficult tasks on your plate is probably the one that could make the greatest difference in your life if you were to get it done and get it done well. You then make the decision to concentrate single-mindedly on this task and to stay at it until it's done. Persevere without diversion or distraction. Focus all of your mind and energies on getting this job finished, no matter how long it takes. Alex McKenzie, in his book, The Time Trap, talks about a principle of time management which is one of the most important ever discovered. It is called single handling. What it consists of is selecting your most important task and then staying with it until it's 100% complete. This principle of concentration combined with single handling will enable you to accomplish extraordinary things. The inability to select the biggest and most important task in front of you and then to discipline yourself to stay with it until it is complete is the primary reason for failure in adult life. In its simplest terms, successful people are those who spend more time doing more productive things. Failures are those who spend more time doing less productive things. The primary difference between success and failure is time usage versus time wastage. Successful people take a lot of time to think about where they are and where they want to go. They use personal strategic planning to chart their course and to analyze each step. They focus their energies and attentions on the one or two things that they can do that can make the greatest difference in their lives. They then concentrate single-mindedly on those one or two things, and they discipline themselves to stay at them until they are successfully completed. They are highly productive in everything they do. Unsuccessful people, on the other hand, do a lot of things that have little or no value. They often consume their entire day clearing up small things, warming up, and getting ready for the one or two big tasks that really count. By the time they have cleared up all their small tasks, the day is gone. They end up feeling stressed and anxious, and they go home fatigued, talking about what a tough day they had. Their primary reason for stress is because their major tasks are building up and growing like an avalanche overhang about to come down on them. Your big tasks don't go away if they don't get done. They just sit there waiting and accumulating with others. Keep asking yourself, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? Every hour of every day, stop yourself and ask, is this the most valuable use of my time? Is this the most important thing that I could possibly be doing at this moment? The power of decision comes from the process of clarity. You become more decisive when you become absolutely clear about what it is you want and what you're going to have to do to achieve it. You become more decisive when you organize your plans and your work and set clear priorities on what you have to do to get from where you are to where you want to go. You become more decisive when you resolve to overcome the fears of failure and to do it anyway, even though there's no guarantee of success. Decisiveness activates your positive mind and releases your creativity. If you make a habit of being decisive, a habit possessed by the most successful and effective people in our society, you will find yourself becoming more powerful, more positive, more confident, and more creative in everything you do. You will eventually shift from positive thinking to positive knowing. You will develop a deep down sense of control and confidence and courage that will enable you to move forward against even the most overwhelming odds. And you will soon come to think of yourself as absolutely unstoppable in everything you do.